evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, July 13th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, I'm back in Hickory Valley, Tennessee for 3 days. Then I'm headed up to Maine, New Hampshire, New York. Then I'll be back again for about 2 seconds, head out to Santa Fe, and then on to Europe, where I'll be through Labor Day. Well, we're still rolling out our second quarter wrap-up, and it's a doozy. You really need to check out the web presentation. There's some great extras. We've got the Solari tune for, it's a four-page comic book presentation, cartoon of why it's important to enforce the Constitution and what the con's all about. And we put that also up on the homepage publicly, so you can feel free to share it with your friends. Then we have two sections to help you dive back into the archives and understand a lot of the key things we talk about in the Solari Report. One is called Long-Term Trends, and the other is Solari Core Concepts. Joseph Farrell and I talk through the long-term trends tonight in part one. We've also updated our listing of the space companies that we did in January 2016 for Space Here We Come, the 2015 annual wrap-up. And then, of course, we updated the Trump report card. Our theme tonight is the U.S. versus Australia, Hong Kong, and Bangladesh. As you know, I love to travel, and it's always a reminder that the world is always bigger than you think. It's always a complete stretch to go. And, of course, I studied in Hong Kong. I've been to Australia several times, but Bangladesh was very new for me, so it was a real learning experience, especially to be in a country that's about 90 to 95% Muslim. Every morning they get up at sunrise and sunset. The call goes out and speakers throughout the city. Dhaka, the capital, is 20 million people for a call to prayer. It's very nice to be in a place where there's a call to prayer with sunrise and sunset. Anyway, so I came back from Bangladesh into San Francisco for a week, then went down to Los Angeles for a couple days, and then was back in Memphis. I kept thinking as I was going about a friend of mine who had lived in Paris for 2 years, and she once said to me, you know, the first year I lived in Paris was the happiest year of my life. And I said, what happened? Why was the second year not so happy? And she said, oh, well, I learned French. And so as soon as I learned French, then I could hear the psychic storm, and I didn't enjoy Paris anywhere as much. So the reality is, you know, my morphogenic field is much more the United States. And so when I'm in Australia, Hong Kong, and Bangladesh, I'm a little bit separate from the psychic storm. Australia is really they call it the lucky country, and it's people are much better off both economically and in terms of general well-being and health than we are here. So it's a little bit like diving back into the United States 20 years ago, except in a much more physically, well, America's very beautiful, but Australia is very, you know, much of the population lives on the ocean, and so it's a very healthy, outgoing culture. Hong Kong was clearly in a tremendous transition and under great pressure. The PRC, the 20th anniversary of the handover was while I was there. And you can see the PRC is really moving in. It's going to be very interesting because if we have tax reform here, you're going to see more money piling in from Asia and certainly from Hong Kong. And then finally, Bangladesh is much more of a developing country, so their sewer and transportation systems and infrastructure are much more sort of third world status than ours. And certainly Hong Kong is much more advanced. So Australia and Hong Kong, pretty sophisticated infrastructure and culture. Bangladesh still struggling with backwards infrastructure. And yet the people are remarkably entrepreneurial and good at navigating and making the best of tremendous economic growth while still struggling with infrastructure that's not building ahead of the speed at which they're growing. But it was exciting because the young people that I was meeting through Dr. McKinney were just marvelous people and very excited about the entrepreneurial opportunities. As I said before, the young people in Australia and Bangladesh were excited and happy about their future, Hong Kong, they were insecure about their future, and I feel the same here, that the young people are much more insecure about their future. And so it was very interesting to see how much more optimistic the cultures were, where people were excited about the future. I felt like when I came back to San Francisco, yes, I was staying in Palo Alto, so I was going sort of into Silicon Valley, but I was up in Marin for a wonderful lunch at Larkspur with 50 great subscribers. It was really marvelous. And but when I was navigating Marin and Silicon Valley, I really felt like I was almost in the Stepford Wives, much, much more uptight culture than Australia or Hong Kong or Bangladesh. So we really felt, you know, America felt very zipped up tight and very mind-controlled. Not to say that, you know, the others aren't dealing with the same kind of technologies that we are, but they're, you know, they're sort of much more, much less tense, much less uptight, much less stressed. And you would think in Bangladesh and Dhaka, with a city of 20 million people with rudimentary sewers and transportation systems, that they'd be under much more stress. But you definitely felt a much more egalitarian, much more human culture. Anyway, so it the whole process has me thinking even more about 5G, which we did a show with Jason Bowden-Smith about 5G when I was down in Australia. And we also did a podcast that he just published on EMF Warriors. It's up on the homepage. So I come back thinking much more about mind control and EMF radiation and how we're going to deal with all these invisible technologies. And, of course, we're all trying to figure it out at the same time. No one has the answers. I think Jason and his group have done incredible research, and so I look to them for some of the latest and greatest. We've been working with our partners in the Netherlands to put together a conference, a webinar that you'll be hearing more about called Out of Control. And it's really about all the invisible methods of centralizing control. So I think that's important. I want to keep diving into that topic until we really figure out how to protect each other. One of the things that struck me coming back into the United States, although you certainly feel it everywhere because the U.S. media and news is so present globally, so it's very much in your face all over the world, but the U.S. corporate news is finding new lows of disinformation. Essentially, I'm going to repeat what I've said before, but I think it's very important we all be clear about this. The clear message from Mr. Global is there's to be no money spent for the general population, no money for healthcare, no money for infrastructure, no money for tax reform for middle or poor, and that leaves Congress in the conundrum of how are they going to pass any of these things and only give benefits to the rich. Mr. Global clearly wants a lot more money for the military and more money for the rich. And Mr. Global does not want people to see what's going on with the federal budget as well as state and local budgets. In fact, what Mr. Global wants is to tear up the Constitution. That's why the push for the Constitutional Convention continues, even though you don't hear a lot about it. So basically what Mr. Global says is, I don't want them getting any money until I can tear up the Constitution and take away their money. So what we're watching is complete obfuscation. It's entertainment, it's distraction, it's keeping people from watching what's seriously happening with federal, state, and local budgets and governance systems. And so it's exceptionally important for your well-being and for all of us that we ignore the political entertainment and understand that the media is trying to get the necessary ratings and create the general distraction necessary so Mr. Global gets what he wants. Now, needless to say, the nature of that conundrum of how to get ratings while you're distracting people is producing something that's so absurd, ridiculous, and literally embarrassing that it is doing tremendous damage to the U.S. brand all over the world. I mean, there's no doubt about it that people who are dealing with real life and real problems are looking at America and saying, you know, they've completely lost their minds. Part of the problem is whenever the president's gone abroad, so he's just been with Macron in Paris during the Bastille Day period and was at in Germany with the G20, And you have the U.S. reporters constantly asking questions about Russian interference in the election. And it's disgraceful. Interestingly enough, if you look at sort of the Russian interference game, you have a high percentage of Democratic voters falling for it and thinking that, you know, there's some sort of chance that they could get rid of Trump, instead of focusing on the fact that what's going on in the budgets and governance system that they desperately need to not only know about but do something about. And then a high percentage of Republican voters are simply waiting for Trump to make good on the promises instead of getting into the trenches and doing what needs to be done. And so in different ways and different reasons, we see all sides of the political spectrum failing to look at what's important and failing to take the action to protect themselves. So here's what you and I need to do. We need to do everything possible to stop the call for constitutional convention in your state. You need to rescind the call if it's been voted for, and four states now have rescinded. You need to stop the call if it's trying to be passed. And then you need to get interested in what's happening in the federal, state, and local budgets that impacts your time and money and the time and money of the businesses and family you're responsible for. I just put up a link to a post from Zero Hedge, five charts explaining just how SCREWED your state is. But it pays to look at what the debt and pension fund and solvency issues are for your debt and think about how it may impact you. It's very important at this time we just turn off all the news and focus on the nuts and bolts of each specific. Now, your situation is different than mine, and so I can't give you any generic rules. But if you read How to Enforce the Constitution in the second quarter wrap-up, there's a ton of links and great ideas on things you can do to get involved, learn about what's going on, and make a difference. But I really think you need to have much greater intelligence about how the money works around you and how it could impact your family budget. Okay, money and markets. Dollar still weak. It's started the year at 103. It's now at 95.5. Fixed income rates look like they're coming up just a tiny bit. The long treasury is now trading at 4.7%, the intermediate at 2.27, bond aggregate at 2.4, and junk still turtling along at 4.83. The equities are strong. The S&P is now up 10. Almost 10.5% for the year, and the home builders up 15%, doing better. Europe up, the VGK ETF up 19%, and Germany up almost 19%. The developed markets minus North America up 16%, so they're outperforming the S&P this year. Given how much the S&P has run ahead, that's not surprising. And then the Chinese up 19.37% on the large caps, and up 19.11% on the small caps. And the emerging markets tear 23.05. Hard to see how it could tear much above that. So I wonder if it's not going to pause here. Commodities, the commodity index now down 9.5%. Gold still up for the year at 5.67%, but silver now down at 1.59%. We need to watch and see if it breaks the 1200 line. It's getting close. And then if it does, we need to see if it breaks the 1100 line. If it breaks the 1100 line, we could be in trouble, particularly if the drumbeats of war get going. And you could see, you know, I'm a lot less concerned about watching a nosedive down to 700, but we could absolutely see a major nosedive here. And then oil still dragging, down 24.33% for the year. We have a series of new commentaries that I wanted to point out and describe to you tonight. Dr. Mark Skidmore of Michigan State University has come forward, and he and his graduate students have been identifying the supporting documentation for the undocumentable adjustments at DOD at HUD. We've put up a commentary called Missing Money Supporting Documentation. It's up at the homepage down near the bottom. That'll be linked from all of our other missing money commentaries, and we have more to add into it, including links to the DOD and HUD website and report this afternoon from Dr. Skidmore. One of his graduate students has found more undocumentable adjustments at DOD, and well, we hope to have those documents next week. And so we'll continue to add on that. And I think that's important because when we're talking about how we enforce the Constitution, it's great to have the original documentation. And so I wanted to make sure you could access it and access it all in one place. As I said before, there's the Soleri tune that we've put up on the homepage, and that's a tune about how we enforce the Constitution. And so please feel free to send that around because it explains the whole thing in cartoon form. As I said earlier, Jason Bawden Smith has published his first podcast on EMF Warriors. It's an interview that Jason and I did when I was in Sydney, and it's up on the homepage. We have a column that we launched 2 months ago, Food for the Soul, written by an extraordinary expert in the field of culture, theater, movies, books, you name it, the whole gamut. And in fact, the new Food for the Soul is a photography exhibit by Lauren Grenfeld called Generation Wealth. It's in LA now. It's going to New York. So for those of you in New York who may have access to it, you might want to read about it. It's fascinating. Anyway, I love this column already, and I'm looking forward to more great things. We have a new one to publish next week. Food for the Soul is going to be running twice a month, and it's all part of Joseph's idea of we've got to reverse and nurture the culture. And I love the insights that the handle of the author is Your Culture Scout, and this is my go-to person on culture, so I'm very excited that they agreed to write this. Then another post from James Quaid on crypto commentary. We've had quite a nosedive in the prices. Ethereum's down almost 50% in a month, and Bitcoin's down 13%. It was down 6% today. So it's just a reminder, as I said, this is a highly speculative market. So the cryptocurrencies are pumping and dumping as they go. Our hero this week is again going to be Cynthia McKinney. I sent out an update, a call for donations with a link to her website. We just made a donation, and I would really encourage you to do that. You can find her website, All Things Cynthia McKinney, and feel free to make a donation. Saker is also called for donations on his site as well. So I would just tell you these are two people who do extraordinary amounts of things with very little money. And donations to Cynthia will help her be involved in politics in the United States. She's teaching in Bangladesh, but she flies back and forth regularly. And so donations help to finance those travel costs and make it possible for her to do many of the things she's doing. Anyway, she is my hero. I just think I think the world of her. I think she's brave and fearless and smart and a very can-do person. She's the kind of person. She's a leader and a builder. And I think that's exactly the kind of person we need to support, as is Saker. So I recommend them highly to you. What we try and do is make at least one donation a week, and we'll put them up in top picks on the website saying Soleri or Catherine's latest donation or latest crowdfund. And I regularly, you know, I try to be a tither and regularly not only send small amounts of money to lots of people, but let you know who they are. One of the things I've discovered is all it takes is a little bit of money from a lot of people to make something go. I'm a great believer in just doing what we can. Okay, let's go to the movies. I wanted to review the first season and a half season of the TV drama series Billions. It's the first season was last year. The second season is underway. They've just committed to a third season. It's loosely based on the legal battles between the U.S. Attorney of the Southern District of New York with hedge fund manager Steve Cohen of SAC Capital Advisors. Basically, you've got a hedge fund manager has company's name is Axe Capital, and he's squabbling throughout the drama series with the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, who's sort of on his tail and out to get him. The reason I wanted to discuss this with you, and I'm going to do this in several parts because I haven't finished watching the second season, let alone the third hasn't started, but basically this portrays business as a war, or business as organized crime, or both, which I think, you know, in this day and age is what it is. But the series does a very effective job of promoting what I call the big lie. And let me explain what the big lie is. When I was a partner, Dylan Rita, I had one of my favorite partners was a man named Peter Flanagan. And Peter took the argument at the partners and the executive committee level that we were paying the trading partners too much money. And finally, to win his argument, he went back and calculated what would happen if we had, instead of having traders in the chairs, we just run the same average inventories the whole time and put chimpanzees in the chairs. And he calculated that we would have made as much or more money, particularly because we wouldn't have had to pay the chimpanzees anything. It was a very effective argument. But what the argument underscored was that a lot of the profits was coming from simply what the central bank was doing and what would happen to investment bank in the market taking advantage of the central bank doing those things. And Peter's point was it didn't take any intelligence or effort. You just had to be there and enjoy the largesse of the central banks and what the U.S. government was doing. Another great example of some of these issues is in the movie Margin Call, where one of the senior traders is driving down the highway in a convertible with a junior guy and explaining to them that they've kept the economy by keeping all this paper floating and bopping around. So let me say it another way. We've been through a period since mid-90s where the central banks and the U.S. government agencies have engaged in massive financial fraud. Whether we're talking about $11.5 trillion going missing from the federal government or the potential for insider trading in the Exchange Stabilization Fund, as we've talked with Rob Kirby, or all the things that Joseph and I have talked about the hidden system of finance and the black budget. Now, when you have those kind of massive cash flows going through, the question is, how can you transfer that money into the pockets of the wealthy and make it look legitimate? Well, hedge funds was one of the vehicles you used to do that, and all makes it look very legal and legitimate. So you you arrange for the hedge funds to be able to borrow at the yen carry trade at essentially 0% and then buy long treasuries and, you know, in using a variety of inside information, simply manufacture profits. That's certainly what you've done with the banks, both in the bailouts and in the beginning of the 90s, or the bailouts that we just had in 2008 to 2012. So you run a federal credit arbitrage is what I call it. Anyway, but there are millions of ways of keeping the hedge fund going, or hedge funds going, particularly if the NSA is doing bulk acquisition of everybody's phone conversations and email. You can imagine how that money can be used for all sorts of tips and insider trading. But whether it's superior intelligence from the deep state and their surveillance machinery, or free cost of capital through both the government and the central bank, you're talking about giving an extraordinary edge to a very big bubble. Now, why would you have an enforcement mechanism running after these very people that you're encouraging? So you're floating a flotilla of financial pirates at the same time you're paying a few a few Navy ships to go sail against them. Well, in that environment, an enforcement mechanism makes sure that people play ball with the deep state and make sure the system looks legitimate. At the same time, as you watch this particular TV series, Billions, it makes it look like the guys who run the hedge fund are just really, really smart and really, really hardworking and see where the world is going. And it's that that generates their billions. Yes, they're doing dirty tricks. Yes, they're getting insider trading tips, but by and large, it's because they're harder working and more ambitious. What you don't see is you don't see the real game. There's no indication. You have all these people having conference or conversations on their cell phones as though they're private. You know, it portrays a world which is fictitious. It's not the real world. What it does do is it does show some of the tensions that we see between government and the private sector, and in that sense, it's interesting. And you do see a little bit about a trading culture, so I find it fun to watch. There's a particular scene that I love where the head of Axe Capital and one of his top traders are basically pretending to fight, and it's a very reminds me of my days screaming on the trading floor at Dillon Reed. I want to see how this storyline plays out, because what happened at the beginning of the second season is they proceeded to do a trade that was one of the trades that we were working on at Hamilton Securities, which is you buy up municipal bonds that are troubled, i.e. in junk status, to gain leverage to put you in charge of reengineering the local economy. And so the question is, when you do that, are you going to play disaster capitalism, or are you going to do it the sort of Hamilton Securities way and rebuild the economy? So you see the tension in the storyline between trying to decide whether they're going to re-engineer or rebuild or do a disaster capitalism. Anyway, I want to see how that storyline plays out, but it's clearly teeing up the place-based opportunity. The people watching this drama are getting a real education in how the place-based opportunity may go down and may work, particularly because the U.S. attorney is now running for governor of New York. So this gets us into all sorts of delicious questions about sort of what really goes on in Albany and New York, and I could write a book about that. Anyway, but it's all getting ready for what Warren Buffett is up to. So Billions, if you are sort of interested in these issues of hedge funds versus government, you might find it interesting. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Hope all is well. I have a question regarding investing in REITs. The Vanguard REIT Mutual Fund is available in my 401k. My concern is, given the profound shift in retail and online shopping and the anticipated closure of many shopping malls, would this cause one to rethink a general REIT like Vanguard? Or is there enough broad exposure separate from retail that make these a good option while creating a portfolio for retirement? I don't know that particular REIT, so I can't speak to that. My goal would be to offset falling returns on commercial with rising returns on residential and warehouses, so industrial. It could be one of the reasons we're seeing a shift to a much higher percent of rental residential population. We're basically seeing a flip in from homeowners to rental. So it depends on a particular REIT and REIT mutual fund where they've got their allocations vis-a-vis shopping malls versus the other categories. Then you say, on the administrative front, is there any option for me to upgrade my membership so I routinely receive a hard copy of the quarterly wrap-ups? I'm so glad you asked that question. We have arranged to launch a premium subscription when we launch our new website, which is expected sometime in early fall. So that's 2 to 3 months away. And the premium subscription will allow you to sign up so you automatically get the hard copies 4 times a year. Hi, Catherine. I'm going to be 63. I'm divorced, single. I don't have any savings, but what I've been doing is buying silver, actual physical silver, that really is my only asset. I'm selling real estate and I anticipate having to do so until the end. I went through a bad divorce and lost everything during the crash. Is that really all I can do to try and hedge myself into old age? It feels like my only viable option. So let me ask you a question. How about what I see is a lot of investors who would like to buy and rent real estate. Real estate is still a more popular investment category than securities. And certainly more than equities, people are concerned that the market is high. They want to get their money more grounded. But most of those people do not want to be bothered with buying and renting real estate. So what I'm seeing is there's a potential for lots of local investors to buy local real estate privately in one-off deals or even a local REIT. But to do that, they need a seasoned professional who knows the nuts and bolts, who can basically oversee the management. That doesn't mean they have to do all the management, but they certainly need to oversee it. And they certainly need to know the ropes of the local real estate business. So what I would be looking to do, in addition to doing your current real estate business, is to try and create a supplemental income flow and equity ownership position on deals where you've got local investors who just don't want to be bothered to do the work, and you're happy to do the work to build up your equity and supplemental income flow. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity, particularly because we are moving to a much higher percentage of rent. So I think the real estate business puts you in the flow to do that, but it's a matter of networking locally and see who's looking, who's got money, who's looking to partner up with somebody who will basically be the legs and do the work. Okay, not a lot of questions this week. It's summer, I can tell. Our interview this evening is part one of News Trends and Stories with Dr. Joseph Farrell. You all know how much I love chewing through News Trends and Stories with him every quarter. So this is one of my favorite things to do. It was fascinating because there was such an explosive amount of news globally. We decided to revisit the long-term trends. So we start out by talking through the long-term trends. And when you're listening to it, I would encourage you to go to the second quarter wrap-up web presentation, which is really outstanding, and just go through the long-term trends. There's a ton of links to help you navigate into the archives, both in long-term trends and Solari core concepts. That's especially useful to anybody who's a new subscriber, and I encourage you to do that. So we start off with long-term trends. Then we go through the first two categories, which is economy and finance, and then geopolitical. And the other five categories we'll go through next week in part two. We also, during the geopolitical section, update our Trump administration report card, which is also up on the web presentation. So again, make sure you access that web presentation. It's got a lot of great, rich resources. Let me just go through them again. How you can enforce the Constitution. When Dr. McKinney and I spoke, we spoke about the Constitution, how important it was, how much we sometimes take it for granted, what would happen if we lost it, what could happen if we enforce it, how great things could be. But I left the how you do it to the web discussion. So that's up on the web presentation. We have the transcript now from Dr. McKinney, and of course the audio was last week. Then we have the section on long-term trends, on Solari core concepts. We have the whole full treatment of news trends and stories and the full treatment of financial markets. But as extras, we have the Trump report card and the space companies, and of course the cartoon on how to enforce, or on the importance of enforcing the Constitution. So this interview is just a great resource. It's amazing to me how, despite the explosiveness of the news, you can really, by listening to the news trends and stories and the wrap-ups, you can really know what's going on with relatively little use of your time. And I encourage you, as you're listening to Dr. Farrell and I would really encourage you to click over to that web presentation and take a look at the supporting material and all the links. Particularly, we've got a lot of new subscribers lately, and I think it'll really help you dive in and use the archives well. Okay, that is it for this week. In closing, next week, again, part two with Dr. Joseph Farrell, and then we have the equity overview and the Rambus Chartology on July 27th, and then August 3rd, great interview with Harry Blaser on the Amazon purchase of Whole Foods. That's the next in our food series. And then August 10th, Strong Towns with Chuck Marone. Very excited about that. I'm a member of Strong Towns. It's a great website with great ideas about how to get more involved locally and do more locally and get the budgets turned around. It's interesting. Chuck is a civil engineer, and he comes from things very much from the point of view of the efficiency of the transportation and physical infrastructure. But he's essentially saying the same thing I'm saying, which is government investment has a negative return on investment. You have to turn it positive. But, of course, the question is how. So the Strong Towns Network has a lot of great ideas and information and then events around the country to help you do that. So a great lineup. I look forward to talking to you next week from Maine, and then I'll be in New York the following week. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.